flip it, and now it goes to the bottom or the near side of your screen. And what that does, you can see the hedge isn't quite in position. The hedge is coming on this right side, and then all of a sudden it's flipped. We got to help, sink, and fill. So we help from 23, we sink or cover down from 27, and then 22 should be filling the nail, and then backside 3 is in what I would call cover 2.
Both teams are doing a great job of making players dribble the catch. Like, look at this flyby here. He's not going to allow him to shoot. He's going to make him dribble the catch. This is a lock left close off here.
So here we get short roll, corner burn. Really, really tough to defend.
Welcome to The Hours. This is a podcast for coaches at all levels who want to think, teach, and lead better. I'm Mark Cassio, joined by Tyler Costin, and we call this The Hours because this is where we get to deep dive and have real conversations and spend real time on the things that actually matter. You can get the show notes and tools from today's episode in our weekly newsletter, so check out the link below. Let's get into this week's episode.
Okay, everyone, welcome to The Hours. We're going to dive into something that I am doing for the first time this entire basketball season. Mark, you care to guess what is something that I have not yet done in the 25-26 basketball season?
I mean, I know this would not be, I think this is a strongly educated guess, something that I may know, but you have not watched a college basketball game?
I have not watched an entire college basketball game, but here is the second guess. And actually, we have all of our VIP and premium savvy coaching members in the chat as well. Feel free to take your guess also. Guess in the comments down below. Which college basketball team, and please designate male or female, which college basketball team have I watched the most game time of this year? Which college team, and men's or women's?
I'm going to guess Arizona State.
Arizona State? Men or
women's.
Okay. Oh, we got a lot of ASU women with my girl Molly Miller at the helm, doing an amazing job. Yeah, okay, everybody's all about Molly. Okay, that would be incorrect. One would think that is correct because I'm in Phoenix, Arizona, because Molly and I presented at clinics together, and I pitched her on running lock left. But the correct answer is actually Notre Dame women, because Hannah Hidalgo is my daughter's favorite player. And so every time we get home from basketball, she immediately goes and watches Hannah Hidalgo play. So that is the most that I've watched. How about you? Actually, let me guess, Mark. Can I guess yours? Can we all guess yours?
Yes, guess mine. Who have I watched the most of?
Okay, yeah. We got Andrew. I'm already guessing LSU. I'm going to go with Andrew as well. I'm going to go LSU men.
Yeah, LSU men's basketball and women's, I mean, is must-see TV for me. I actually went to the LSU women's game against South Carolina. Okay. A former player of mine was nice enough to gift me tickets at half court, 10 rows up. Atmosphere was awesome. We lost, but it was a really good game.
I like how you said the royal we. That's how you know you're a true fan, when you say we.
Yeah,
I don't say we about any college basketball team. All right, so today, appreciate everybody listening to that. Today, we're actually going to watch and break down some college film together, and we're going to learn not just like anything specific, but really just a lens. I think as we learn other coaches' lenses, we get better. Recently, just went and worked with the team right before they went into playoffs, and a really good coach, master's in coaching, really just successful. And I came in and I just had a different lens than he had. And so I said, hey, I think this person needs to play a little bit more. And I think you need to try to run this action a little bit more. And you need to actually, crazily enough, I said, don't play 5 out. You actually need to play 4 out, which is against my personal preferences. And he's like, oh, I see that perspective. And getting another lens will broaden all of our perspectives, whether you agree with it or go with it or not. So I think that's what we're trying to do here, is sharing a savvy lens to how we, Mark and myself, would watch a game, so that maybe you can adopt that lens at times as well.
Full disclosure, I've not watched any of this game. Obviously, Tyler is not as well. But I do have a bunch of respect for both of these programs and coaches. You got a 6-2 matchup here. Tyler, what do you think about this number 3 here defensively?
Yeah.
Positioning off ball, and then tell me, how do you feel about this stunt and hunt here?
Well, first, I would say he's squeezing the ball a little too much on strong side corner. He's a little too close to the ball handler. Let me see the stunt and hunt. What I like to call skirmish. Yeah, it's too early and too committed. Too early and too committed. I also think, let's go back to like where he hunts as well. Like right when the ball handler makes his move, maybe pause it when we get the greatest advantage right here. Pause. Okay, so I actually don't think that the ball handler has gotten his shoulders by the defender yet either. Which, you know, for me is a trigger for, this is when we really want to squeeze the ball. We want to be really aggressive with this stunt, is if the ball handler has their shoulders by. I don't think the ball handler has his shoulders by. And in the lock left as well, we want any help that may be needed to actually come from the wall, which is the player in the smile at the rim. So I'd say over-aggressive on the stunt and hunt.
Yeah, this is, I think this is one of the easiest things, talking lock left, to adjust is like where you position yourself in the gap or in snipe position. This is, to me, this is 50-50, meaning you are halfway between ball and man. I think that's too much. I would always lean towards maybe like a 60-40, maybe even 70-30, just a little bit closer to your man than the ball. And that's something that you can adjust for shooters as well. So one adjustment that we would make against a really good shooter, let's say number seven in the corner is a really good shooter, we might be 90-10, and we're just like 10% away from our man and given more space to the ball just because we're guarding a lethal shooter. I also think we're hunting the ball here and not the pass. Mm-hmm. Now we hunt the pass, but you're late, you're in recovery. Although we do force a shot off the bounce, which I don't mind.
Good job making him put the ball on the deck, for sure.
Yes.
But actually, I know last time we did this, we spent too long. I want to show one more thing. Can you just go back to the beginning of the possession where they run that action initially? And this is just, I think this is a key lens. All right, let's pause here. So right before they run the action. All right. Yeah.
Right,
so
right here?
Yeah, wherever. They start with a little bit of false movement, but it's whatever. Okay, so they run an action. Obviously, this play was scripted and called before we started the game. This was their first play, right? So the action goes, let the action go. Keep going, and now pause. Okay. Are we in advantage, Mark?
We are not.
Okay. So I would say we are not in a positional advantage. Like the action did not create advantage. And so the lens that we would adopt as savvy coaches is, all right, the purpose of action is to get from neutral to advantage, to get into the place where we create a little bit of E2, engaging two defenders, which happens when we just go ISO here. I would argue maybe, Mark, that the only advantage we created was a switch, so that we do have a small advantage of a little bit weaker defender on a stronger attacker, which maybe that's the outcome of it. But I think that lens is important. It's like, okay, let's gauge our actions or our plays, not by how well we executed them, but by did we generate advantage or not. That's a big shift in lens, because a traditional coach might look at that action and be like, great job running the play. You all ran to the spot you were supposed to. Whereas a savvy coach would look at it and be like, okay, not that valuable. Maybe we should spend time on something else.
Yeah. So Ryan, one of our premium members in the chat asked, did they want to just see how they were going to guard ball screens right away? Like, probably. I think that's always a good thing to do offensively. If you don't know what coverage you're going to see, let's just set a ball screen first possession, see what we got. And then one thing that I saw here that I love, one of my favorite ball screen weapons, and this is what I would call a pre-contact weapon, which means before we make contact, before we get to the ball screen, how are we going to manipulate coverage? This is what I call flipping the ball screen. So you see we're coming here. It looks like we're going to set a ball screen on the right side of the defender, go into the top of your screen. But as we get out here, we flip it, and now it goes to the bottom or the near side of your screen. And what that does, you can see the hedge isn't quite in position. The hedge is coming on this right side, and then all of a sudden it's flipped. So the hedge is a little bit late. That's the idea there. And then obviously they switch. They guard the ball screen with two, which I'm a big fan of. All right, we won't spend any more time on one possession. All right, so it looks like another call to action, right? Most Tyler, are you a big fan of starting games with a call?
I am not a big fan of starting games with a call. How about you?
Probably not to a fault.
Yeah.
One of my mentors is like, hey, we were a motion team. So he's like, get in our stuff. Like, I want to see us run our stuff against their stuff. So, mm-hmm. like, you know, and he was so confident in what we ran. It was like, we don't have to call a play to create an advantage. Now, this is false motion, right? And then a lot of teams on this pass across get into the step up action. Here's what I see. Aggressive coverage, shocking, by Houston, right? They're usually really aggressive in coverage. So this is a blitz or a trap. Here's what I really like about this. Let's see if, let me watch it one more time, make sure I, all right, yeah. Okay, I actually had one of our members reach out about how to attack a hard hedge. This is more of a blitz or a trap, but same idea is, instead of dragging the double out or dragging the hard hedge out and trying to hit like an early window pocket pass to a short roll, I really love getting off the ball as quickly as possible. So you'll see three hit the wing, and then we go one more to the roll. So we click it here, and then the idea is that the next player is going to hit the roll here, and you got him right down Main Street. Just timing wasn't great, I guess, or he didn't love it.
But I would say that still created an advantage, the early pass.
Yeah.
Right over to three. You know, the other interesting thing here is I just love the spacing. Great job holding the corners. I love how we're playing in this wide or the swing spot to have that quick pressure release. I love how the early action, the little handoff is done really, really high. Yeah, I mean, just strategically, I really like the spacing.
Yeah. It'd be interesting to see if they go back to this. Get to the next action. Keep it on the DHO. Get to the free throw line. All right, we're not going to get free throws. If any synergy aficionados are out there, you know, if you do all clips, then like it shows the same possession multiple times. So I always just go to all possessions. So we're not going to have free throws in here. Not great spacing by Houston.
Not great spacing.
All right, so here's just a quick thought on spacing that we've known a lot of film breakdowns for our members, particularly against some kind of zone or half-court pressure. And I was doing a film breakdown the other day. I'm like, all right, so we're crossing half-court and we're neutral. What we want to try to do is cross with advantage. And then I actually corrected myself, and I'm like, wait a second. Our spacing's not good. We're actually crossing half-court at a disadvantage. I'd say Houston right now is not neutral. They're at a disadvantage because Iowa State has the advantage because we're guarding poor spacing. All right, so they correct their spacing here, get into an action, little double drag.
Can we pause just two frames right there? Perfect. So let's watch. Now the ball gets into jail. So this is like a lock left principle, but it's a defensive principle. As the ball gets to jail, I want you to watch the wall player. Go ahead and get the skip.
Let me interrupt you, and then you pause when the ball gets to jail.
Yeah.
So number one, if I could fix anything about this possession, it would be to arrive better spaced, better organized. We get into just like 77 or double drag here. Get into it way earlier. Like, you let Iowa State get established, get neutral, get matched. Mm-hmm. So now there's so much lag. There's already 14 seconds. We're down to 14 seconds on the shot clock where we do create advantage here. We're at small advantage now, and then we draw two to the ball. Against the best defenses, which Iowa State is really, really good defensively, there's going to be one player that's open. Nice job by Houston. I don't know who this is, but finding this jump skip pass here. So we have two on. Would love to see the ball go two out. Ryan Rush even said in the chat here, two on, two out. Really good sticky language. So we have two on. Let's go two out. We don't, but also what sticks out to me, and then I'm going to turn it to you, Tyler, we're killing the post on our cover down. So anytime that ball goes baseline, we got to help, sink, and fill. So we help from 23. We sink or cover down from 27. And then 22 should be filling the nail. And then backside three is in what I would call cover two. You're covering two players, so you're splitting the difference. And then some people call this an X out. I just call this a near man closeout. Watch 27 leave the post and get the next pass. I think it's 27. Yeah, so he gets the next pass out. All right, Tyler, ball's in jail.
Good. Let's go back to the pass again before we go to jail again. We have two on. All right. This, and pause right there. This is what I'd encourage all coaches watching. This is what you want to constrain in rep. Constrain this situation. This, you know, Mark talked a couple of weeks ago about either prevent or punish.
Yep.
Right? So we want to prevent defensively. We want to prevent as many scenarios that we get beat and we have to bring two to the ball. on offense. We want to engage two defenders on defense. We don't want to bring two to the ball unless we're intentionally trapping. We think we'll get an advantage there. Okay. But it's going to happen. So we want to prevent bringing two to the ball, but then we don't want to get punished when we do. And so this would be how I would start. I would start with a small advantage for a ball handler. We would script in the lock left. It's beautiful because we know exactly where that second defender is going to be coming from in all scenarios. So we had script this one scenario, and then we would play out of it. Be like, okay, when we're in this scenario, we need to do all of these things. We need to wedge down. We need to cover two. We need to get to the nail, all these things. And then play out of this disadvantage situation, play to either neutral or a shot attempt and play a game. Now, three quick things that will help you in this constrained game in any scenario that you might be facing that you want to get better at. One, make sure that the defensive team, because we're training the defense right now, make sure the defensive team stays on for multiple reps. They're not rotating out every single rep. That allows them to correct and actually learn. Here's the second thing. I would definitely play to points. And, you know, I would play defense gets a point for a stop. Offense gets their points for a score. I like to play by ones and twos. You can play it to five before you rotate it out. And then the last thing is I do like actually rotating different offensive players in every possession, whether you have lines or teams, because the different personnel and the different looks will give enough variation to the defense that it will help transfer a little bit better to games. It'll be a little bit more dynamic. So that's what I would suggest doing in any situation you're going to have to guard. Let's say you're going up against a dominant post player, a team that runs high-low. Just put your players into that constrained situation. Play game after game after game with those scenarios. I'll add a fourth little bonus one whenever you're trying to train a five-on-five defensive scenario. I would suggest you play your first constrained game four-on-four. Here's why. Four-on-four actually gives a little more advantage to the offense because you have a little bit more spacing. So it makes it a little bit harder for the defense. So it's going to attempt to get some of that game challenge of the pressure and the speed if you do it four-on-four when you first initiate it as well.
Yeah. I love four-on-four. I actually wish the game was played four-on-four. So much more fun. I would also argue, like, something that we didn't talk about, overhelp. Right here. And I think over help, you talk about preventing getting cover two. So in 21 drives, best case scenario, we get a nine, whether he finishes a nine or we dump it down our dunker for a nine. The second best scenario is that we draw two to the ball. Like, I think this was unnecessarily drawing two to the ball. Like, I don't think he was a threat to get a nine. Our wall defender should eliminate nines, not just help just to help. So I think if we look at the location, this pass is thrown like at the high school 3-point line, he's 20 feet away from the basket. Don't come outside the paint. Don't overhelp because now you get your team in rotation. Houston doesn't do a great job of punishing rotation. So now we're neutral. We're in jail. This is where we'd want to overload and give early help. So I really like this. Mm. Oh, he like attacks the ball. We're living with that shot.
Yeah.
Not a good offensive possession, good result, but that's one where it's like, okay, score. I dare you to score 70 points playing offense like that. Man, Houston is just going to try to make you pay anytime you ball screen.
Which, as a default, that works even better. It's working great at a high level. It works even better at lower levels. That would be my default suggestion for every coach that's playing at or below this level, which is like top level D1, like default to an absolute blitz and make you pay on a ball screen.
Yeah, against really good defensive teams, which Kelvin Sampson will likely always have, there's one player that's open. That's 27 right now. That's just a really hard pass, especially as you, like you said, as you go down in levels, just be way more, if you want to win more games at the youth level, just be more aggressive and you'll win a lot of games. Now, one thing I like that Iowa State is doing offensively is like, I like the timing that they're running their stuff. You got a little back screen. And then we've got, well, I guess people call this Zoom. Some people call it Chicago. You got a pin down into a handoff, which now we get the ball with an advantage. And that's why I love what we call Zoom. Some people call them gets, but that stationary handoff, I love it because number three, when he gets the ball, we're already at a pretty big advantage here. If we don't, and the blitz was almost late. It's like he has to flip his hips right at the last second. And then now we try to drag it out. But against the softer coverage, you're probably getting downhill, at least cracking the shell here.
Mm-hmm.
All right, go two out. Good. Go three out. Too late. That is a tough shot.
Tough shot. I would like to pull the seven at the top of the key instead of that.
All right. Houston's into their action faster. Ooh, that's a tough shot too.
Mm-hmm.
This is a dogfight defensively, man.
I'm interested to see what they do in transition here.
Hmm.
I mean, great job cracking the shell. Would have loved to be a little bit more balanced and play off 2 feet on the initial hunt, but a good two out. Tough shot off the dribble. I mean, both teams are doing a great job of making players dribble the catch. Like, look at this flyby here. He's not going to allow him to shoot. He's going to make him dribble the catch. This is a lock left close off here from this big of a disadvantage.
Yeah, that was my big takeaway too. So many coaches. I saw on Twitter the other day, somebody posted, what's the hardest thing to teach in basketball?
Whether you're a first-time listener or a regular listener, I want to thank you for being here. And if there's something that you've heard and you want to go deeper with us, the absolute best way is to join our Savvy Basketball membership. You can get ongoing support from Tyler and I and our exclusive community, but you also get our entire classroom of courses and weekly live coaching calls. So if you have questions on offense, defense, player development, practice design, culture building, anything that you need support on, we're here to help. And the best way to get that help is through our Savvy Basketball membership. I have our 7-day free trial on. If you want to give it a shot, the link is in the description below. All right, back to the episode.
And overwhelmingly, the result was closeouts. And I'm like, really? Like, I think if closeouts are hard to teach, if you're spending a lot of time teaching closeouts, you're probably asking your players to do way too much. And most coaches traditionally have taught, all right, we're in this closeout situation right here. I want you to
take away everything.
Take away the shot. Contest the shot.
And you're disadvantaged.
Yeah. And keep the ball in front and funnel it to where we want to go when you're all at a disadvantage. Like, that is easier said than done. I've always made the joke is, like, I can pull a rabbit out of my hat as well while I'm at it. Or, you know, this is like zero technique. It's all just what's the end result? Every catch is a dribble. So just make this dude dribble. Even if he has to take that, what I call a rhythm dribble, into a shot, that's fine. Like, he's a sniper. He made it. But we at least added a degree of difficulty to the shot, which I believe this is the dude that hit the game winner. Spoiler alert. We're not going to watch the whole game, but I think it was 67.
I was planning on watching the whole game.
I mean, we would have been here for hours, but we could have fast forwarded. Let's actually, at some point, whenever you're ready, just tell me, let's fast forward to the end of the game and we'll see. Because I didn't see it. I just saw the very last shot. So I don't know how the situation played out.
It's interesting that Iowa State's full switching everything.
Ooh, look at that aggressive switch.
Yeah.
That might have been a scram.
If they're going to switch. All right, so here's my hierarchy of ball screen coverages that I would teach. One, full blitz. Second one would be aggressive switch. And the third one would be full drop. Because I think what you want to do with ball screen coverages is have things that are significantly different. The best ball handlers and the best teams will eventually figure out how to beat your coverage. So if you're going to switch coverages, make sure that they are significantly different. But if you're layering them in and you're teaching, I would approach it in that order.
All right. I think there's two ways to approach it. Your approach and have significant difference in your coverages. The other one would be, what if we just downed or iced? Same thing, using those terms synonymously, but sometimes, or a coverage A is we just down it. Coverage B is we down to a blitz, right? So as the ball, let's just say we were here, as the ball drives, we blitz that. And then coverage C is we down to a switch. So whenever they use the screen or we cancel the screen and they come off, then it's a switch. So I think there's two approaches. It's the approach that Tyler shared is, hey, let's just be really different. Let's blitz, switch, and then down. And then the other approach is, we're going to down, but we can go regular, we can switch it, or we can blitz all out of down.
Yeah, one of our coaches who's watching the stream live here asked, would you ice a ball screen going left and blitz going right and lock left? And I would suggest, as you change your coverages, cover every screen from every angle the same way until you change your coverages. I think that's too much, too complex for most players to think, oh, we're going to do this thing when the ball is going right and this thing when the ball is going left. It's effective enough if you just change your coverages for all screens regardless of angle.
All right, so here's what I'm seeing in this next possession. Iowa State is setting what's called a ram screen. They're going to screen for the eventual screener. And the idea here is that we make coverage late. So this would be a prevent tactic, right? How do we prevent the heart or the blitz here is try to set a screen. Now when we for our screener, so now when we get to the ball handler, coverage is late, was not successful here. Houston did a good job of fighting through the ram screen. So they arrive attached defensively. If defensively, we want to arrive attached, so we're on time in our coverage. Offensively, we want to arrive alone, so defense is behind or late in the coverage. Now, two on the ball, we have advantage. It's just really hard to find that pass on time. Houston's doing a really nice job of disrupting. Pass goes out like way, you know, 40 feet away from the rim, so time to get neutral here.
And really the biggest difference, could you just go back to the point of the screen where they blitz it? The biggest difference between college players and the top pro ball handlers is their ability. Yeah, let's pause it right as he gets doubled. Is their ability to punish this situation. So right now there are open passes. I mean, Luka would have the ball at the rim for the guy on the block, you know, for a dunk, but he's going slow and he sees it in advance and he would open up a window he would stop and make a ball fake one way to make the center fielder, the guy right on the logo, to bite one way or another to create a bigger advantage. That's really just like the difference is slowing down. One piece of sticky language that I used with this team that I worked with last weekend is play fast on offense, play fast without the ball, play slow with the ball, play fast without the ball, play slow with the ball. And that's really the goal of any pressure defense or any blitzing defense is try to speed up the ball handler to make a quick decision because the slower they are with the ball, the more they're able to punish the advantage.
They were able to punish this one. So what Iowa State did is they got back into very similar to action. I call this Chicago, pinned down into a DHO. Houston's going to blitz. And it's interesting. Houston is just blitzing everything. Mm-hmm. And then we're left with, you know, a 4-point line three with 4 seconds on the shot clock. He nails it. Be interesting to see who adjusts first. Like, does Iowa State get away from ball screens knowing that it's being disrupted, or does Houston, if they get punished, do they change their coverage here? I don't know what either team does.
I mean, as a defensive coach on that last possession, I'm not mad that that's the shot we gave up. No. 4-point line three on a small advantage.
Late clock, last yep. Shot clock bin, yeah.
You know, one thing I'm noticing about both teams is in transition, they aren't fully committed to attempting to crack the shell in transition. They're fully committed to running their first action. The only hunt we've seen so far was like the obvious steal transition hunt.
Yeah, big advantage. Not taking advantage of like just small advantage. Small advantage in transition might be 5-on-5, just we're organized in defense. Is
for sure.
Let's try to crack
and really, and like from a lens standpoint, what I'd offer up is just cracking the shell and engaging two defenders in transition, even though it doesn't result in a shot or a dominoes. If you do that before flowing quickly into your first action will be more effective. And that's what neither of these teams is yet doing. And that's what we really believe as a savvy coach is like, and that's going back to your first question, Mark, like, do I like scripting our first action to start a game? No, not because I don't think it's helpful, but because I want us to play all the time how we want to play all the time, which is, can we create a small advantage before we get into our first action, whatever that may be. And so I think if we're like, oh, we're scripting the action, that's when we stop looking for that initial hunt. We need to ask the defense questions. Can you keep us out of the paint in transition? And I don't think either team has really asked that question yet.
Yeah. See how good the other team's transition D is before anything. Similar to a pressing team. It's like, hey, we're gonna see how well you can handle pressure and break our press. And if you can, cool. We can always adjust. We got 32 or 40 minutes to do that. Yeah. I stopped it on this possession.
I think that's another, just want to highlight that, Mark, for everybody listening. That's another sign of a savvy coach is a coach that is willing to adjust and a coach that knows their first adjustment in advance. Hey, we're going to press, but I'm not committed to the press. If it's getting punished, I know our adjustment. Hey, I'm willing to blitz a ball screen, but I'm not going to stay committed to it. If they're killing it, we got a drop coverage to go to. Like you've got a primary and a counter to everything, and you're ready to adjust. You're not attached to anything. I think, you know, that's really what we're sharing here as far as what a savvy coach is, one that's really smart, that's tough, that's clever, that has this style of coaching.
Yeah. And I think part of that is we're going to play the way we play, and we're going to try to get you to play that way. So it's not, oh, we can press this team, but we can't press that team. And we can play man against this team, but we can't man this team. Like, no. This is who we are. This is what we do really well. And like you said, we always have time and are willing to adjust. I stopped on this possession. A couple things that I see that might add some value to coaches is common action that you're seeing in the game today is ball screen with an exit screen. So if you look down at the baseline, we're setting an exit screen for a shooter. This is just a way to manipulate the tag, right? Like you talk about like weak side exchange to occupy weak side defense. This is a way to occupy ball side defense to where maybe you confuse who the tag is here. And then other common action that you see against aggressive coverage, like a hard hedge or a blitz, is short roll. So you're looking just for an early window pocket pass. And then you've got really corner three or what we call a seven or burn. So here we get short roll, corner, burn, really, really tough to defend. You can see they're playing 3-on-2 here. Ball at the nail, two guys on the corner burning in, really tough to defend. And I love, gosh, underrated skill, like late in the season as we record this now, it's February. If I could add one skill as like a protection plan or end of drive finishing package, one-inch shot fake at the rim, right there. Yeah, just a very slow half-court game.
I mean, that's the biggest feedback that I would give to Houston is can you get into your actions faster and can you at least attempt to crack the shell and create some sort of some sort of advantage in transition before you flow into your actions? Just it's a lot of like stop and set it up.
Here's some transition off a turnover.
Thank you.
All right, here we go. Do we score, get a shot in transition, or do they get into quote unquote run offense here?
They've got a big numerical advantage at this point in time. I'm going to say they get a shot out of transition or the initial advantage.
What's the shot?
Two out three.
Megan guessed we get a shot in transition here. If anybody else has a guess, drop it.
Oh, okay. Nice. Peter and Ryan say transition threes.
All right, here we go. I'm going to say this is not transition. We are in the half court. But we do shoot a seven.
He missed a two out on it. I don't know. I might argue that was the advantage created out of the transition.
I think this is the advantage
created. Yes, agreed. Yes, agreed. We're not in transition, but we did create an advantage. Let's pause at that kick out again, because I really think like the two out was there. I'm not just arguing for my prediction.
Yes, you are. But just kidding. But this is what I've always called early offense. Is this transition? Probably it's not, right? Is this like, did we run an action to create offense or an advantage? No. So like, to me, this is that in between of what I always just call it early offense. Whenever we charted in game, I wanted to know how much we're scoring in the half court, how much we're scoring in transition, but also this middle ground is something that we charted as well.
Yeah. A really simple way to differentiate between what Mark is calling early offense and what Mark is calling half court is it pre or post action, right? So that shot was pre-action. If the shot comes post-action, then I would designate it as what Mark is calling half-court.
Also, there's probably like some 7-11-21.
Yeah.
You could maybe use that in there as well.
Yeah. All right, Ryan asked, would you practice? And the coaches that are here in the chat as we record live are our premium savvy basketball members and our VIP savvy basketball members. If you would like to come and join live, just go and join the community. It's a free trial for 7 days. We'd love to have you. Love to have you on live. This is the first time that we've done it. I'm really enjoying it. Ryan asked, would you practice main ball screen coverage and adjustment coverage leading up to a game? Mark?
Yes. If we're going to run it, if we're going to use it, we practice it.
Yeah.
Now, I might just balance, okay, do we think we're going to be in here 50-50 in the game? Is this like a is our adjustment coverage a weapon that we're going to use? So, hey, we're going to start in blitz, but we know at some point we're going to go switch. And once they figure out the switch, we're going to go back to blitz and we're going to play that chess game. Then I'm probably practicing 50-50. If our adjustment is the emergency, like we don't really want to get to this coverage, but this is our, like if we have to, then I might practice it, you know, 25% of the time. So I think that's the, yes, we're going to practice it, but how much? That's the kind of the art of coaching. Art of coaching is when to do what, right? Like, when are we going to do what we do? So that would be the balance that every head coach has to make. All right, 1-4 low. I saw Bruce Pearl present at a clinic in 2007 when he was the head coach at Tennessee. He shared the 1-4 low stuff. And it was like cutting edge back then. Now everybody has run it or is running it. So we started running it. Full disclosure, I had a Division I walk-on inbounding the ball, and my two players at the blocks were Division I players. Both are actually still playing professionally. So I guess I had, you know, I had a Division II player on the floor, I had a D1 walk-on inbounding it, and then two pros on the block. So we killed people with this. Now, this is one that we ran a lot of different stuff out of this. One that I have run that's similar to this one is throw it to your athlete at the elbow, throw it elbow to elbow. We would either fingers cut from here, get right into our action, and we would set it really low. Like that fingers cut would be elbow to elbow, or number three would come back screen for 27. So this initial player is going to get this catch, and then we would try to go across and set back screen. I haven't seen this one as much. I have seen it before, but I do like 22 coming out of the corner here and setting a flare. I love a flare. And we curl. I don't know if it's supposed to be a back screen flare. We curl it for a layup and then get that shot out of here.
I love that look though.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really like the, I call it a flat setup. I think all coaches should have a flat setup. Even if you run the exact same stuff out of your flat, your high, your box, there's different ways to get into it. But this is an essential one. I think that this just tends to create more space at the rim than a box set, and that's why I like it.
Also, what you see a lot now is, since this has become really predictable, 27 coming to the ball side block, going to the ball side elbow, some people will send the opposite block to the ball side elbow, just because usually this player isn't quite as engaged and attached, although Houston is now. But here's what I like about just anything based on out of bounds, but I think you can do it easily out of this, what Tyler calls flat, is get the ball in bounds. You might try to score off of like the initial action. Like we line up, what we did a lot is we would just cross screen, block to block, throw a little lob to the front of the rim. But if we don't get that, then let's make them guard something else after the ball is inbounded. So maybe a principle or something, a lens that you can look at based on a bounds is, are we trying to score off the first pass? First pass being like inbounder throws one pass for a layup, or the second pass, where inbounder throws the ball, it gets it inbounds, we throw one more pass, and then we run an action. I think the best ones have like a first pass option and a second pass option.
Yeah. Well, Mark, I know that we're coming to the end of our breakdown. Maybe you can, I'll share one announcement, then you can just do a quick 3-point summary of like what takeaways one might, a coach could go and apply. We can make this really applicable. Here's the announcement I'm really excited about. Stay tuned, because we are very excited to announce the launch of our Savvy Basketball Player community. We've partnered with someone that I really respect in the player training space, Reed Yusey, who has trained countless pros, works with Paige Beckers and Andrew Wiggins, and is a really amazing teacher of the game. And in March, we are going to be launching our Savvy player community. It's Catalyst Training by Savvy. That's Reed's brand. And we are going to launch everything we do for coaches, but for players. The place for players that want to become more savvy. We're thrilled about it. We're going to launch it with an amazing off-season challenge for those motivated players that want to absolutely come back better this off-season. So stay tuned, everybody that is going to be watching this podcast, listening to this podcast. Make sure you get on our email list. Just head to savvycoach.com, sign up for our newsletter, and you'll be in on the early announcement for our founding members for where players go to get better and become more savvy. Not just where you go and learn another dribble move, but where you actually develop your IQ, your reads, and the skills needed to execute those reads. So excited about that. Player access, yep, we'll have the shooting in there. Ryan asked as well. Everything for players will be in there. Including our 28-day shooting program and everything new that Reed's bringing to the table, what he does with all of his pro players.
Yeah, we already have a classroom of content built out for the player community. So it's not just we'll move savvy stuff into this, but there's also a ton of new content coming from Reed. If you don't follow Reed right now on Twitter or Instagram, do so. He's constantly sharing a ton of good stuff, very savvy. On brand, obviously, otherwise we wouldn't be partnering with him.
Yeah, we'll drop the social links in the description below this podcast on YouTube for sure.
Cool. Carlos, I got the full game footage from Synergy. So in college, all teams have to upload their game film by midnight to Synergy, and that's how you share film at the college level. So we have a Synergy account, which we can get any NBA, college, I think Euro game too. All right, here are my three takeaways from watching the film. Number one, I started to take notes as you were talking. Like, first thing I wrote down is identity, and I'll just go like with pace. Like, both of us really saw like, hey, both teams could probably increase pace. Like, half court was an absolute grind. So the goal, if I'm Iowa State or Houston, would be let's be in the half court less. Let's see if we can arrive in dominoes and get something good and not let Houston be really disruptive. Not let Iowa State get into us and pressure the ball and take us out of our action. But pace could also just mean running your actions sooner in the possession, like Tyler mentioned with Houston, or like running your actions with better pace. Are we playing with force? Are we sprinting to our screen? Are we sprinting off the screen? Are we rolling hard off the ball screen? So all of those things, like pace and everything. Second, the importance of training dominoes. Almost every possession, as well as these defenses were playing, there were still advantages to be had. But how many times, like, oh, they missed the two out, or hey, this player is open over here, but that's a really tough pass, or we had an opportunity to click the ball there, but they, you know, we held it for an extra half second, or the pass was off target, so we lost our advantage. So the importance of training dominoes would be two, and then three. This is the one, like, probably that's top of mind right now. And for me, is every defense takes something away. Houston's blitzing the ball screen. You're taking something away, but at the same time, you're giving something up. And what I would challenge coaches that are thinking late season prep, hey, what happens if we blitz this ball screen, this player's wide open? I don't know. Like, make the other team find that. Just like Tyler said about transition D, is like, make the other coach prove to you that he has prepared his team for transition defense. So all of those things is like, coach from a place of aggression, solve all your problems with aggression instead of, oh, I don't think we can do that because the other team will do this. You don't know that. You're making an assumption based off what you're giving up. Look at it more through the lens of, hey, what are we going to take away and how are we going to dictate the terms? Because the tougher team, the more aggressive team, is always going to set the rules of engagement.
It's good. Okay, final question for our coaches that are in the live chat here. What do you think these two teams were better at? You got to pick one across both teams. Were they better at running their actions, or were they better at playing with advantage? What do you think that they were better at? What did they execute better? Running their actions or playing once they got the advantage? Just go action or advantage here in the chat.
Yeah, type action or advantage in the chat, Tyler. While they're doing that, I'm going to flip the question to you. What do you think?
I don't want to give it away. Okay, good. Okay, I agree with our coaches. They are savvy coaches. They were way better at running their actions. They executed their actions well. Three things that they fell short on with advantage. One, first and foremost, shot selection. Like that is the greatest indicator of how well you play with advantage. Do you recognize how big of an advantage you have? And you select the best shot on the shot scale. So their shot selection was suspect. So they haven't trained enough playing with advantage to then plus one the advantage when they have a small advantage instead of shooting the advantage. Second thing was playing off 2 feet. So when you have advantage, you can get into the paint, you can crack the shell, you can hunt the world. And once you do that, you have a greater advantage. So let's not give up that greater advantage. When we have the ball in the heart of the defense, let's not rush a pass. Let's be patient. Let's be purposeful. Let's be powerful. Let's peek at the rim. Let's make fakes. And they didn't play off 2 feet very well in the paint. That's another aspect of playing with advantage. Last one is just going to be 0.5 decisions. Their 0.5 decisions of shoot it, drive it, move it when they had advantage weren't fast enough and weren't correct enough often enough. So those would be the three specific ways they would improve in playing with advantage. And it just comes down, like, we know what they spend most of their practice time on, both the teams. They executed their actions really well. That's probably what they're spending most of their practice time on. They defended really well. They're probably spending a lot of practice time on that. They have the greatest opportunity in playing with advantage. They probably don't spend as much practice time on it. So if either of those coaches want to hit us up and you want to learn how to play with advantage more, we are here to help, just like we help so many of our coaches. Appreciate all of our savvy premium VIP members that jumped on live for this early access. You made it more fun for me. I don't know if you made it more fun for Mark or not.
Definitely. This was fun. We'll do it again. Also, last takeaway, this is the bonus takeaway, is winning at that level is so hard. Like, Tyler and I have both coached at the Division I level, and it's just really, really hard to win at that level, no matter what. So as you watch college basketball, just have an appreciation for it of, like, what's at stake, how good defenses are, and how tough it is to generate advantages. So when you do, you got to punish it. All right. This was fun. We'll do it again. Stay savvy, everyone.
Thanks for making it to the end of the hours. And before I let you go, I want to make sure you can continue to learn with us in between episodes by joining our newsletter. You'll get weekly coaching insights to your inbox, which includes coaching notes from every episode. No spam, just clear, practical tools that'll make you a better coach. You can sign up at SavvyCoach.com. Stay savvy.